Program Normal Show Live is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents...
We love the Herb.
Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator. Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome. It is Friday, April 6, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the show. We are so excited to bring this weekend edition of Normal Show Live to you. Joining us from our virtual studio in beautiful Grastoria, Oregon, is our senior news editor, Cannabis Carrie. Hey, speaking of holiday weekend, I don't know if you're supposed to get this sort of present for the Easter weekend, but I got a great present. I wanted to show it off to you, Carrie.
Oh, let me see it.
Okay, hold on. Let me get the, we'll get the clear video on here. Our own Big Daddy Fink in the chat room, a.k.a., Timmy Harris at timmyharris.com, just built us this Normal Show sound effects soundboard. I can go straight to sports and get a bowling ball if I need it. You never know when you need a bowling ball. Or a boxing bell. We got video games. There's your spy hunter.
Where does this computer wizard live?
I don't know. We'll have to ask him in the chat room.
You should move to Portland, I think.
We got all our different movies and TV shows here. We can go straight to South Park. Give you a little Mr. Mackey.
Drugs are bad. You shouldn't do drugs. If you do them, you're bad. Because drugs are bad, okay?
And the best part about it is this, it's a separate application, so I can control its volume separate from the Liebermater, so I won't have to drown you out with sound effects when I want to have them in the background.
Thank you, Big Daddy Fink. Thank you so very much.
Yeah, that's so awesome. Check out timmyharris.com if you want to see more of his work. It's pretty awesome. Anyway, Carrie brings us our hemp headlines right after the first break, so what do we got in the news today?
I do. You know, I will call the first week of April an update week. I've had updates every single day on the news, and today we have two of them. First, I want to update you on the biggest story of the week. Plus, I want to update you on that. I don't know if you remember this. Do you remember the TCU football scandal, the drug ring scandal that happened earlier this year? I'm going to give you an update on that. There's some movement in that case. And also, I'm going to tell you about a really interesting story about that marijuana, medical marijuana being shipped out of state. That's all coming up in today's hemp headlines.
Yes, as TCU is the only team to have beaten Boise State twice in the 21st century, I remember everything about TCU. We've also got a story about the upcoming hash bash. It's taking place this weekend, Saturday, in Ann Arbor, Michigan. It is kind of the kickoff of the American protestival festival circuit. So we'll talk a little bit about hash bash. Also on today's show, it's Rockin' Friday, so Herb Thrasher joins us, bringing us some hair metal from Wasp. We got Paul Armentano at the bottom of the hour updating us on all the different state legislatures. And then at the end of the show, time for a radical rant on driving impaired under cannabis. We're back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Hi, I'm Radical Russ. One of the best things about marijuana is the wonderful aroma. But when you travel a lot like I do, that aroma becomes a suspicious smell. That's why I endorse stealth-products.com, the leaders in smell-proof containers. From smell-proof vacuum bags to smell-proof backpacks and duffel bags, all the way to smell-proof digital safes, stealth-products.com has you covered. Stealth-products.com brings you safe, secure, odorless layers of protection with activated carbon fiber. Backpacks and duffel bags are simple black so as not to attract attention with a logo or a flashy design. Now, nothing is perfectly odor-controlled from the detection of drug dogs, but with proper vigilance, containers from stealth-products.com will help you avoid nosy humans.
You're now listening to Elliot Beats.
Stealth-products.com. Stealth-products.com.
This is Normal Show Law.
Weedmaps.com. I'm Radical Russ from Normal. In my job as outreach coordinator, I travel every month, and when I'm on the road, I need a fast, accurate way to find the medical marijuana dispensaries in the area. So I turn to Weedmaps.com. Weedmaps.com has the best dispensary locator online or on your mobile device. Search by zip code or let Weedmaps find you, and in seconds you'll have the addresses, phone numbers, and customer service reviews for the medical marijuana dispensaries in the local area. Weedmaps.com also has a section devoted to helping you find a doctor who understands and recommends medical marijuana under your state's law. You can even check prices on the Medical Marijuana Stock Exchange. Coming soon, you'll even be able to find the listings of normal attorneys and chapters, local head shops and grow shops, and the best weed-friendly businesses. Weedmaps.com has the information you need to be an informed cannabis consumer. Visit Weedmaps.com today, a proud sponsor of the Normal Network.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
Very sad update I have on the biggest story this week. Richard Lee, whose groundbreaking university, Oaksterdam, has decided to give up the ownership of all of his Oakland-based medical marijuana businesses in the wake of the federal raid on his properties on Monday. He told the media in a statement today that he has been doing it for such a long time, over 20 years, and he feels like it is time for others to take over the fight. In the raid, Lee's assets, including all of his plants, his bank accounts, and his records and computers were seized. Richard Lee has long been an outspoken cannabis advocate, and he spent more than $1.5 million of the money he made running the popular and successful business in downtown Oakland to try and legalize cannabis for all adults in the state of California by running the Prop 19 campaign. Oaksterdam did reopen this week and remains open for some of their classes, but many of the classes have been canceled and much of the class schedule has been scaled back. I would imagine the cultivation classes have all been canceled. He had to shut down the nursery because his stock of mother plants that he has been nurturing for years were all confiscated. The dispensary Richard owns, it was also raided, has also been reopened, but Lee says he plans to transfer the business to new operators. The Oaksterdam campus has been open since 2007 and has inspired countless students and visitors of what society could look like with the marijuana trade being a legitimate business. Richard Lee told media outlets today that he believes that cannabis prohibition is unjust and counterproductive. He said that what he has done was ethical and that he tried to use the resources that he had to do everything he could to change the laws. I would say that no one can argue with that. It's terrible and probably obvious end to this story from this week. Russ, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, Richard sounded pretty down when we spoke to him yesterday, and I guess I should have taken the line of questioning into that area. You know, what is going to happen of Oaksterdam? I was so much more concerned about Richard Lee himself. And you know, this is understandable. Like you said, he's put 20 years into this. He's put $1.5 million into it. It's not like anybody's going to say he didn't do enough for legalization. And I don't think he's going anywhere with respect to activism and the movement. I think we'll still hear plenty from Richard Lee. I just think as a business, and more specifically as being a target, you know, such a big target for the IRS, for the DEA, that can take its toll. And you don't always want to, you know, be there and be that target. You know, it can be very, very scary. So I totally understand where he's coming from here. And again, this doesn't necessarily mean the end of Oaksterdam. We might have other people that are just taking that over. And I will start asking around. When we find out more information about this, we will let you know. Oh, we have lost Cannabis Carrie on the connection. We'll just get her a call back here real quick. But in further news, I wanted to tell folks about the Hash Bash that is taking place in Ann Arbor, Michigan this weekend on Saturday. Now, this is one of the longest, I think it's the longest running marijuana protest festival, as well as the earliest one to take place in the season. We've got they're expecting a record crowd there at the Hash Bash, mostly because of such high profile court cases now regarding Michigan's medical marijuana law. It is their 41st annual Hash Bash. It was started in 1972 to celebrate the freedom of activist and cannabis advocate John Sinclair, who was serving a 10-year prison sentence for a bust involving just two marijuana joints. That, of course, prompted John Lennon to write the song 10 for 2. Other people like Dr. Lester Grinspoon got involved. The Yippies, Dana Beale, all sorts of people were involved with this in getting Hash Bash off the ground. This year's event will feature Stephen D'Angelo, the director of the nation's largest medical marijuana dispensary, Harborside. He'll be speaking alongside other activists that are going to include Charmy Goulson, the founder of Michigan Moms United to End the War on Drugs, and she's also the editor of American Cultivator, and Chuck Ream, the president of Arborside Dispensary, not Harborside, but Arborside in Ann Arbor. He's going to be emceeing the Hash Bash. The University of Michigan group Students for Sensible Drug Policy also helped to organize the event, and Safer Michigan Coalition, which is organizing citizen initiatives for decriminalization or lowest law enforcement priority. They are expecting about 10,000 people at the Hash Bash, part of their pushback against the efforts by the current Attorney General to restrict the Michigan Medical Marijuana Act. Also, Matt Abel, the executive director of the Michigan chapter of Normal and the campaign director for the Committee for a Safer Michigan, will be present to speak about a state initiative to fully legalize marijuana in the state of Michigan.
More students from Texas were in court yesterday answering to drug charges. We've been following a drug sting that went down on the Texas Christian University campus earlier this year. A six-month investigation went into a possible marijuana selling ring that led to the arrest of 17 students early in February. The media went nuts going on about the problem with marijuana on college campuses. Four of the students arrested were football players. One of those arrested went on to give an interview to police, telling them that he failed a team drug test and that he went player by player through the roster on the team and said that 60 more players from the team would fail drug tests. That hit the media, and that information was released in the warrant. It brought so much attention to student-athlete drug use. But as the hype died down over the next few weeks, it turns out that after all of those claims, only 11 players out of the rest of the team had traces of marijuana metabolites in their urine. And all 11 of those tested positive, but they really tested within the margin of error of that test. The rest of the 86 players on the TCU football team all tested clean. Attorneys of the students who were arrested said that this is little more than college kids buying and smoking marijuana, and it did not warrant either a six-month investigation or the charges of marijuana trafficking ring. Yesterday, that defensive tackle, Tanner Brock, that made those statements to police about the rest of the team not being able to pass a drug test, was in court, along with 13 others who were formally charged yesterday as part of that ongoing TCU drug investigation, bringing the number of students charged with drug crimes in this case to a whopping 23. Three of those charged yesterday were on the football team, Brock, Ty Horn, and DJ Yendry. Cornerback Devin Johnson had already been formally charged last month for his part in the crime. Now, all four were charged with delivering a quarter of an ounce to 5 pounds of marijuana. Penalties for the young athletes could be up to 2 years for Brock, Horn, and Johnson. Yendry, who is charged with delivering marijuana in a drug-free school zone, is facing up to 10 years in prison if he's convicted. The four players all charged with selling marijuana were all charged with selling marijuana to undercover officers. The rest were all just students, and they're also awaiting their fate.
Wow. None of these students was a kicker by any chance, was he?
I don't think so.
That's too late to help Boise State anyway. No, all joking aside, here, what, like one of the chat room people was saying, oh my God, they have marijuana in college now? This is bringing down the long arm of the law on college kids, you know, trying to make a little scratch selling a baggies of weed on a college campus doesn't seem to me to be the most pressing priority that we have here. I wonder how many times, that is Texas Christian University. Of course, I'm sure they don't have keg parties there, right? They don't have any drinking going on there, right? How many kids right there are underage drinkers, are getting involved with alcohol there and you know, having the puking and the fights and sometimes even the overdoses on alcohol, and we want to worry about whether or not some football players are peddling some weed. You know, if you really have a problem with this, there's a couple of solutions. One would be to pay NCAA athletes. I know that's a crime. Sorry. That's a crazy thing. I must have been smoking something. The other solution here would be to legalize marijuana. You know, you don't see these TCU players slinging six packs of beer, you know, trying to sell beer to anyone else, because most of the people on the TCU campus that want to go buy a beer have a place to go buy a beer. They can go buy it in a legal, regulated place. There is no black market or a tiny, tiny black market in alcohol because it's just no profit motive in doing so. The very prohibition of marijuana has made marijuana 10 times more expensive than it costs to produce. And this, and the risk involved in every step, every transaction, every division of that marijuana along the way adds a prohibition risk premium. That is, every person along the way taking their cut to deal with the fact that they might get busted sometime. If marijuana were legal, it would sell at rates so much lower, you know, one-tenth what it's selling for right now, there would be no way to make a living as a college kid dealing bags of weeds to your friends. And why would they buy them from you? They would just go to the weed store and get them themselves. But again, it's not because anybody's really concerned with whether or not college kids are smoking marijuana. It's that we have an easy way to keep our thumb on a certain segment of society to be able to you know, rough up kids, to be able to search their dorm rooms, to be able to find ways of enforcing rules against them. And it just needs to stop.
A 42-year-old man who owns a medical marijuana dispensary in California was taken into custody yesterday after a package he was sending got intercepted by the Pennsylvania police. William Byron of Eureka, California, was taken into custody in Wyomissing, Pennsylvania, at the address that the package was to be shipped by parcel service. The investigation began on Tuesday when a narcotics interdiction team from the California Department of Justice alerted the Wyomissing authorities that a suspicious package that may have been addressed to a fictitious name was being shipped to that Wyomissing address. According to the Californian authorities, that package was shipped overnight, the shipping fee was paid in cash, and the package weighed 39 pounds. The Wyomissing police took custody of the package when it arrived in town, and they gave it to a narcotics unit detective. Reading, Pennsylvania police narcotics dog had already indicated that the package contained illegal drugs when the package arrived in the state, and they had obtained a search warrant for the parcel. Inside, they found 25 pounds of high-grade marijuana split up between 30 heat-sealed bags, something the investigators are calling packaged for sale. Detectives went on to the address, and a woman answered the door. The police asked her if she was alone in the house, and she said her friend Bill was there visiting from California. Byron came to the door but refused to give identification or answer any of their questions. He just walked away. The police claim that they saw a bulletproof vest in full view and then arrested Byron so he could be searched for weapons. They found his ID in his wallet. Police say that the woman at the scene became very upset when she learned what was happening and said that she had been friends with the suspect for years and could not believe he would ever use her home for marijuana distribution. Now, she was not arrested, but Byron was taken to the Berks County Prison and is being held on $1 million arraignment. He was charged this morning with marijuana trafficking and conspiracy, along with other related offenses. Now, his store, the Humboldt County Collective in Eureka, was raided yesterday afternoon, and it caused a bit of panic in the town. The other dispensaries, fearing a large-scale crackdown was imminent, closed their doors, and patients were seen traveling from one closed dispensary to another. Many patients expressed fear about their own home addresses being readily available to federal agents. Now, no other dispensaries were targeted, only Mr. Byron's, and the Humboldt County Collective remained closed today. But all the other dispensaries in town opened, with the exception of one that just said closed due to a family emergency on the door. So there's an interesting mix of stories here, Russ, from one coast to the other.
Yeah, we hear more and more of these stories where there's a tie between a medical marijuana state and a non-medical marijuana state. And it does make things difficult as we try to get medical marijuana passed in other states, you know, east of the Mississippi, where they have a lot of doubts about the programs and about how well they can be controlled. So it's always interesting when we have to report on these kind of stories. Although, you know, the one overriding theme in all of them is this terrorism that's involved from our government. When you talk about the patients going from one closed dispensary to the next, you know, I imagine the general public listening to it doesn't think much of it. But imagine that you're a patient and that's your, you know, that's your health that we're talking about. That's whether or not you're going to be able to sleep tonight. That's whether or not you're going to be able to eat. You're going to be able to control your nausea enough. Whether or not you're going to be able to control seizures enough that you don't hit yourself or hurt yourself in the middle of the day. And so imagine that you had been dealing with people in the black market. You'd been dealing with unsure supplies and unsafe access for so long. And then finally, you get to a point where you're able to access medical marijuana where it is safe, where you do have a reliable source. and then it gets closed down, and the one behind it gets closed down, and the one next to it closes for fear of the next one being closed, and you don't know how you're going to get to sleep, how you're going to eat that night. That's terrorism, my friends. Oh, I just hate to think about it. Think about the people that, you know, it's almost worse in a way that we got them the safe access and then we snatched it away from them. How cruel is that?
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
I'm Sub Cool from Team Green Avenger. At TGAGenetics.com, we are working on the leading edge of medical strains. Our strains are rigorously tested for THC, CBD, THCV, and other critical cannabinoids. Know your grow. Check out our genetic diversity at TGAGenetics.com, the home of Jelly Bean, Jack the Ripper, Vortex, and other award-winning cannabis strains.
La cucaracha, la cucaracha. Ya no puede caminar.
You're listening to Normal Show Live.
Porque le falta marihuana que fumar.
You chippin'.
The voice of the marijuana nation.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be re-examined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORMAL, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORML, NORML.org.
It's time for your daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Today, we take you into the weekend with Rockin' Friday. Our segment features the best of rock, metal, punk, and jam band music. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now here's some more great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tune.
All right, Herb Thrasher's going to get us into some metal, and by judging the picture today, we're getting into the hair metal. Where's my Aquanet? Hey, Herb, what's up?
I love that, dude. It is some hair metal. You know, I forget about that, but I guess, you know, they, a lot of people call it hair metal, or I've heard the term butt rock, which that just disturbs me whenever I hear that.
Let's go with hair
but
metal.
I guess it is, dude. I got to admit, it is. But it's all good, dude.
It's all good. Although I'm jealous, so I miss my hair. I used to rock the Aquanet pretty damn well.
I used to have a killer mullet, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
All right, so tell us, why do we got Wasp on the show today?
All right, so, yeah, you know, it's just a rocking time, and these guys, man, they've been around for 30 years, and I saw this tune months and months ago and just been holding on to it, and we don't have too much hair metal on these days, you know. It's a lot harder metal, which Wasp was really, dude, kind of unfair on the hair metal, dude, because they were kind of... They were too heavy for heavy metal. I mean, too light for heavy metal, and they were too heavy for the hair metal, and so they were just kind of stuck in the middle.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know, blocking out all the blood, which blood and hair don't get along. And but you know, at the same time, Blackie had all these chicks on stage dancing, and the metal heads didn't care for that. So Wasp was just always stuck on their own, man.
Yeah.
And ended up picking up, but I saw it as a killer, like the title of it, man. Just had me going, because, you know, we all think, man, us legalizers or us patients, you know, we're there, man. We're so close, and just going to wake up and it's going to be there and we're already there. I get my medicine. But, you know, the reality of it is we're really a long, long way to go still. We still have a long ways to go. As seen just this week with Richard Lee and what you've been talking about and all that good stuff. So Dominator, the song was on the album Dominator. And it was their 13th studio album released by heavy metal band Wasp in 2007. The release was originally planned for the label, but the deal fell through, and so it was only really released in the UK. Hmm. There's covers on it by Deep Purple, the song Burn, and Fortunate Son by Creedence Clearwater Revival, but they were eventually dropped from the album. So it felt like this album kind of was great, and then all of a sudden everything fell out of hell, and it just went down, and then nothing ever happened with it. So, but you guys still, like I said, 30 years. So on September 12th of this year, they're going to start a world tour and celebrate this 30 years. And so, you guys who's out there, go see them, man. Wasp is always a killer band. I've seen them a couple times throughout the years. Always had a great stage show. And don't forget to check us out on Normal Rocks tonight. We've got a great show, a lot of new music. No interviews tonight, man. We're just going to play music. I'm going to hold off on interviews, man. We've been having interviews like every week, and we just need to play some music. There's too much good music out there, and we're going to rock. So join us tonight, 8 o'clock. Rock on.
Right on. Normal Rock, Third Thrasher, 8 o'clock tonight. This is Wasp. Long, long way to go.
Tokers and Tokettes, this is Radical Russ from Normal Show Live. We're proud to be the voice of the marijuana nation and proud to have you on our team. Now, you can represent NSL in your own Normal Show Live gear from handmadeapparel.biz. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel is one of us and a huge supporter of our show. He's designed the classic Blockhead line of NSL shirts, hoodies, hats, and more. worn by Radical Russ, Cannabis Carry, and Ganja John on the show and at live events. The designs feature their iconic logos and the "It's Got to Be 420 Somewhere in the World" tagline. Proceeds directly benefit Normal Show Live and HandmadeApparel.biz, one of our community's strongest supporters. You can also get your Cannabis Cure UK, Ganja John Show, Irie Island Hour, and more gear from the Normal Network at HandmadeApparel.biz. Visit HandmadeApparel.biz today.
Pot 2.0. It's not your father's Woodstock weed. This is Normal Show Live.
As regards to legalization, it's not in the president's vocabulary and it's not in mine.
Providing dictionaries to drug czars since 2009.
I don't care what you say. That ain't right. I said, that ain't right. That ain't right. I don't care what you say.
Tune in to the Normal Network every weekday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern for our primetime lineup. We begin with an hour of daily Toker Tunes, followed by Normal Show Live and Toker Talk Radio, live from Rolla J Studios in Portland, Oregon. Then, you get 2 hours of recorded podcasts from national and international reformers, followed by our late-night live shows at 11 p.m. Eastern. Then the whole six-hour block repeats twice overnight. It's the Normal Network, your source for the best in marijuana media. Normal has been the place to go for the latest studies and news on marijuana science, policy, and activism. For over a decade, one man at Normal has written and reviewed more studies and news stories regarding marijuana than most anyone on the planet. First as senior policy analyst and now as deputy director, Normal's Paul Amentano has written for major newspapers, academic journals, and magazines on the subject of cannabis and is frequently requested as an expert witness in the courtroom. His knowledge and experience are an amazing asset to the cannabis community. Available to you now in a segment we call Behind the Headlines with Paul Amentano.
All right, folks, we are here on this Friday to speak with Paul about the latest updates in the state legislatures. Hi, Paul. Paul, how are you?
Hey, Russ. How are you?
I'm doing real good, despite the big story of the week, the Oaksterdam thing. Before we got to the legislative stuff, I know that you've been a lecturer and you've worked alongside Richard Lee there at Oaksterdam for a long time. What are your thoughts on these latest federal raids?
You know, I have the highest level of personal respect for Richard. I think he has put himself out there in a way that very few of us, even those of us involved in cannabis law reform, have done. And I think what is really most powerful about Richard's actions is that through his work founding Oaksterdam University and through his work of bankrolling Proposition 19 and through his efforts that have really revitalized that neighborhood in downtown Oakland, you know, this man has done a lot more than just change public opinion when it comes to marijuana and the way the public thinks about marijuana. His actions have succeeded in changing the culture. And there's really a fundamental difference, in my opinion, between the two, because public opinion can be fickle. It sways one way, then it sways another way later. But when you change the culture, you create lasting, permanent change. And that's what Richard's actions have done. And I believe that is, by and large, why the federal government made him a target this week and why they're trying to silence him.
Yeah, and we just got the breaking news out of the Los Angeles Times today where Richard says that he's going to be leaving the business, perhaps turning it over to others. Do you have any other information on that other than what we've seen in the Times?
No, not really, other than I know even before Monday's actions, there had been some talk behind the scenes about maybe trying to make Oaksterdam University a facility that would be entirely separate from Richard, so that if Richard was ever targeted in this manner, that establishment in one way, shape, or form would continue to be viable and continue to exist. So that part doesn't surprise me that they're going in that direction.
All right. Well, let's take a look at our efforts to legalize, decriminalize, and medicalize marijuana in the states. First, we'll turn to Connecticut, where we've got Connecticut Normal. Eric Williams has been doing a lot of hard work shepherding and lobbying some bills there. What are the latest updates from Connecticut?
Well, as folks know, a couple weeks ago, the Judiciary Committee voted out Ray's Bill 5389, which is a medical marijuana bill. This is a measure that is supported by the governor and that many people, including Eric Williams from Connecticut Normal, were involved with over the summer in the drafting process. Right now, that measure is before the Finance Committee. They have to put a fiscal note together, essentially estimating how much revenue this bill might potentially bring in if passed, and how much money it may cost to actually go ahead and implement. So that fiscal note is expected by April 10th. That's when the Finance Committee is expected to act on the bill. And then following that action, it's going to go to yet another committee. It's likely going to go to Public Health. And only then would it go to the floor. So there is still sort of a long and winding road for this measure, but right now we do see quite a bit of legislative support for it, and we're hopeful that this bill is going to continue to move. It's not so much opposition from lawmakers that could ultimately be a hurdle here, but it's simply the length of time the legislature is meeting. We're up against the clock in Connecticut, so we need to get this bill through the committees it needs to go through in the next few weeks.
How does this bill in Connecticut, is it similar or different from the other bills we have around the nation, the other laws we have around the nation?
It's fairly similar to the sort of legislation you are seeing more often than not on the East Coast.
Okay.
There's a qualifying list of conditions, and largely the distribution scheme would involve some sort of state license providers.
It's kind of interesting how this is shaking out, that we might end up with a country with East Coast medical marijuana and West Coast medical marijuana. It reminds me of the rap battles of the early 90s.
Exactly. but in contrast to that, we have New Hampshire's medical marijuana bill, Senate Bill 409, and this is the measure that passed the Senate just last week and is now before the House. Unlike the proposed bill in Connecticut, and unlike the nascent law in Delaware that's yet to be enacted, the way Senate Bill 409 is written is that qualified patients would be able to still grow their own cannabis. They'd be able to grow up to four plants and possess up to 6 ounces of marijuana. And in that case, the proposal does not elect the state to get involved in the dispensing of cannabis, because as everyone listening recognizes, this administration in recent years has become increasingly hostile to the idea of any sort of third party, even a licensed third party, provider of cannabis. So in the case of New Hampshire, they said, fine, if you don't want state-licensed dispensaries, we'll just let patients grow their own. And that's the alternative that's now moving through the New Hampshire legislature. Unfortunately, in New Hampshire, we still have to deal with Democrat Governor John Lynch, who, as he did in the past when he has previously vetoed medical marijuana legislation, he is also threatening this year to do so again if that bill gets to his desk. So it's not so much that we need majority support in the legislature, New Hampshire, which, by the way, we have, but we need supermajority support, because this bill, to become law, is going to need to override the governor's veto.
Yeah, that's right. And it does sound more like an Oregon-style program, where we're having the patients with caregivers and people growing for the patients. So that's interesting to see that up in New England. There's another bill, and I don't know, this may be going along with the zombie theme that's so popular these days, with Tennessee, where the bill was dead, but now it may be back alive. I was seeing something coming through the email. What's the latest on Tennessee's medical marijuana?
Tennessee has a medical marijuana bill that's been introduced in both the House and Senate. It's called the Safe Access to Medical Cannabis Act. This is about the second or third incarnation of this legislation. Last year, this bill actually, quite surprisingly, made quite a bit of progress in the legislature. Tennessee Normal actually hired a full-time lobbyist to work at the state capitol and try and shepherd this bill. In this year, within the last couple weeks, as the legislature sort of been in its final days, we've seen a whole lot of activity about this bill. There's been three or four separate hearings, and we've seen both committees in the House and the Senate in recent days go ahead and pass this bill out of committee. The bill right now is pending before the Senate Health Committee, and because of certain legislative rules in that state, that committee will, in fact, have formal hearings and hear this bill, even though, by and large, the Senate is now no longer in session.
All right. Good news there, I guess. Let's go to Rhode Island with what's going on in their legislature.
Rhode Island has a decriminalization bill. It is a measure that would reduce the penalties for simple marijuana possession to a $150 fine and no criminal record. This has really been long overdue in Rhode Island. It has surprised me personally that a legislature that has, on the one hand, been so supportive of medical marijuana, on the other hand, has been reticent to really take up decriminalization. But this year, there is this measure in both the House and the Senate, and the House and Senate Judiciary Committees last week held hearings on this bill, but I don't believe they've yet taken votes on the measure. So definitely this is a situation where folks, if they live in Rhode Island, should go to the normal CAPWIS/issues page. You can get there by just clicking on the ACT button on the normal.org homepage and writing their House members and their senator and telling them to support decriminalization in the Ocean State.
Yeah, I'd also like to make a shout out to the people of Rhode Island. If you're listening, we'd love to have a normal affiliate there in Rhode Island as well. Send me an email at stash@normal.org. If you're interested in forming Rhode Island Normal, we'd like to find some activists there to help us with our efforts there in the Ocean State. All right, now to our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., where trying to get medical marijuana started has, well, it's gone like most things in Washington, D.C., in fits and starts and much slower than we'd all like. What's the latest in D.C.?
You know, I can't imagine what your listeners think when they see these headlines out of Washington, D.C., because unless you've been following this issue for more than a decade and you're familiar with district politics, you'd really be left scratching your head, because even as somebody who worked in D.C. for many years and has been following this issue from the get-go, you know, I have to half the time scratch my head and say, what is going on with medical marijuana in the District of Columbia? Here's the best way I can explain it. As many of your listeners may or may not know, in 1998, going back almost, 14 years now, there was an initiative on the ballot in Washington, D.C. to allow for the medical use of marijuana. Voters in D.C. in 1998 voted in favor. By 69%, they voted in favor of this initiative, and known as Initiative 59. But at that time, certain drug warriors in Congress passed an amendment that said the District of Columbia could spend no monies on any effort that could potentially lessen marijuana penalties. So for over a decade, the District of Columbia was not allowed to count the votes and process them. That ban was then lifted in 2010. But rather than simply enacting the initiative as it had been written and passed by the voters in 1998, the D.C. City Council decided to fundamentally amend Initiative 59 and instead establish a process where qualified patients would only be able to legally possess marijuana if they purchased it from a district licensed cannabis provider. And over the last 2 years, the district has worked with their local regulators to try and set up a licensing and distribution scheme to allow for the cultivation and distribution of medical marijuana in the District of Columbia. And earlier this week, D.C. health officials finally announced the 6 winning applicants who, in theory, will eventually be licensed to provide the medical marijuana for the patients in D.C. that have now been waiting 14 years to have some legal protection. But this is really just the beginning of the process, as even these winning applicants still need to get business licenses, and they still need to jump through a number of other regulatory hurdles before they can actually put a seed in the ground or in a pot to try and begin providing patients in the district who need it. Conversely, patients in D.C. do not have any legal protection until these dispensaries are up and running, because the way the district amended the law says that you can only possess marijuana if it comes from a licensed dispensary. So right now, the dispensary operators are still in limbo, and the patients are still in limbo. And of course, everybody in D.C. is looking over their shoulder, wondering when and if the federal government is going to step in.
Wow. You know, and if I remember correctly, this original initiative, I mean, we just talked about East Coast marijuana versus West Coast marijuana. The original D.C. initiative is in 98, right after, you know, Prop 215 in 1996, and was very 215-like. Didn't it have, you know, any condition to doctor?
It was very 215-like.
Yeah.
It did not have a list of qualifying conditions. It left the recommendation up to a doctor's discretion. It allows for home cultivation. Yes, you are correct. It was very much like the enacted law in California and also in Maine, mm-hmm. by the way, which has a very Prop 215-like law. And district officials were convinced that the federal government would never allow the District of Columbia to implement that kind of a broad-based law. And they were probably correct. The way district politics works is that even though D.C. has their own local officials, the District of Columbia cannot pass laws unless the federal government also approves or signs off on those laws. So D.C. officials said the way I-59 was written and passed by voters in 1998 would never pass this muster from members of Congress. So instead they tried to amend it to write this very, very tightly written, narrow law, the one they're trying to implement now. And to date, the federal government has not told them otherwise. But there's a big difference between the federal government theoretically allowing D.C. to move forward with the dispensing of cannabis and the actuality of Congress allowing D.C. to move forward independently and set up a cannabis distribution scheme in the nation's capital.
Yeah,
so I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, exactly. I just always love pointing out that the people of D.C. passed medical marijuana by the greatest amount that it's ever been passed, 69%, and they passed it as liberal as California's was. So what the people want and what the politicians will allow are two different things in D.C. Well,
exactly, and that is really the battle that is fought in D.C. or in the District of Columbia, not just on this issue, but literally on every issue that the district deals with.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, Paul Armentano is Normal's Deputy Director, joining us from the Bay Area in California, and thanks for coming here and updating us on the legislatures around the nation.
No problem, and definitely I encourage people to click that ACT button on the normal.org homepage, because that is where they can keep up with all the legislative activity taking place all across the country.
All right. Thanks a lot, Paul. When we come back, we will have a little bit of time for a radical rant. We're going to talk about driving and toking, or toking and driving, or when you should and when you shouldn't. We'll answer a lot of questions and maybe ask a few more. Be right back after this.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the Marijuana Nation.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
Guess what? I got a fever! And the only prescription is more Belvac. I gotta have more Belvac. Gotta have more Belvac.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers.
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right, folks, well, we're going to get into the topic of driving and cannabis. It's something that's very controversial in our community and outside our community as well. What got me onto the subject today was this website I saw. They had sent out a PR. It was through the PR news web. And it was this auto insurance company, this website on an auto insurance company claiming that marijuana users are safe drivers. I don't necessarily disagree, but I wanted to just talk about it a little bit because Normal's principles of responsible use, this is a guideline of five basic principles of responsible use that were adopted by our board of directors in February of 1996, has this particular platform in it. The responsible cannabis consumer does not operate a motor vehicle or other dangerous machinery while impaired by cannabis, nor, like other responsible citizens, while impaired by any other substance or condition, including some medicines and fatigue. Although cannabis is said by most experts to be safer than alcohol and many prescription drugs with motorists, responsible cannabis consumers never operate vehicles, motor vehicles, in an impaired condition. Public safety demands not only that impaired drivers be taken off the road, but that objective measures of impairment be developed and used rather than chemical testing. So when I read that, the question I would say is, what defines impaired? Yeah, don't operate machinery while impaired by cannabis. But is the consumption of marijuana equal to impairment? What about an hour after consumption? What if you're a frequent consumer and you've developed a tolerance to the impairing effects of marijuana? Now, these are questions that are kind of difficult to answer. Paul Armentano, who we just spoke to, does a remarkable job of compiling and updating the latest studies in his white paper titled Cannabis and Driving, a Scientific and Rational Review. However, never does Paul or Normal make the assertion that smoking marijuana and getting behind the wheel, or vice versa, is going to make you a better driver. Now, this online insurance website, however, claims marijuana users are safe drivers. So I take a look at their claims. In there, they've got a top 10 list, top 10 reasons marijuana users are safer drivers. And they cite a lot of the same studies that we've covered at Normal and we've talked about on this show, although they do make a couple of exaggerated claims about some of the study's conclusions. I mean, for instance, they pointed out that one that we noted that there's been a drop in fatalities in the medical marijuana states. And that's true, and it is laudable, but it's more likely attributable to a drop in beer sales. Yeah, so there may be less drunk drivers because some of them substituted marijuana for beer. And yeah, marijuana-using drivers are safer than beer-using drivers, but it doesn't follow that marijuana users are safe drivers. It only shows that less drinking is equal to less fatalities, and marijuana means less drinking. I know it's kind of a slight difference, but it is logically important. I mean, if marijuana were as ubiquitous and legal as beer, we don't know what the fatalities would be. And that brings me to the glaring problem that exists when we try to talk about any studies regarding marijuana and driving, and that's the fact that marijuana is illegal. Do pot-smoking drivers drive slower, stay in their lane better, put more distance between themselves and another car, have fewer fatalities, whatever? I mean, because they're safer drivers? Or because the threat of any interaction with a police officer will get them arrested and get them a drug record rather than just a ticket and a warning? The prohibition itself confounds anything we might learn about pot smoking and driving. Maybe pot smokers are more careful drivers because they're worried about getting busted. So when we're arguing about marijuana legalization, we got to be pretty careful around this driving issue because it's politically it's a hot button issue. And there's a couple of bad ways to argue the issue that if you think through them, you'll see why they're a bad idea. In this website's top 10 list, their number 7 list was this: most marijuana smokers have fewer crashes because they don't even drive in the first place and just stay home, thus concluded more than one of these tests on pot smoking and driving. And why are the marijuana smokers staying at home? Because marijuana smoking is illegal. I mean, if you pin your argument on this point, all the prohibitionist has to say is, oh, so once we legalize and there's coffee shops and places where people can drive to and smoke weed, then they'll be driving, right? They won't be staying at home. So you got to be careful of where, this isn't just checkers. You got to think about what the opponent's going to say in response to what you try to assert. Now, if you focus on these safety statistics, we need to work on showing that there's not a fear right now that's being ginned up about the stone drivers is a false panic, but it's a very fine line you have to walk. We want to make sure to say that marijuana users aren't more dangerous drivers, but it's difficult if you start saying that they are safer drivers. So we have to be very careful there. Because it almost can come off to our opponents and can come off to the people that are on the fence as if we're advocating for people smoking and driving. But then, that gets us back to the original question. What defines impaired? If I went to dinner and had a beer and then I had some dessert and then I hung out and chatted with my friends for a while, and then an hour after I drank the beer, I got into my car in the parking lot at the restaurant and drove home, would anybody think I'm impaired? I mean, I'm a 6-foot-tall, 250-pound man and drinking one 16-ounce American beer. I don't think very many people would consider my drive home a crime. But what if the beer is a joint shared with friends at dinner, and I'm leaving my friend's house an hour after smoking it? Certainly I'm not impaired. In fact, I'm even less impaired than if I drank the 16-ounce beer. So how does one establish a guideline for responsible marijuana use that depends on the driver's evaluation of self-impairment? My belief that I'm unimpaired after an hour could be someone else saying it's only after a half hour for themselves. And then eventually you got some toker saying, hey, I'm just fine to drive while I'm smoking a joint. And you know what the problem is? I believe them. I've known lots of marijuana smokers who think nothing of sparking up a joint while driving on a long road trip. I grew up with road musicians who traveled all across the country while smoking doobies and never had so much as a speeding ticket or a fender bender. Cell phones in cars scare me more on a highway than somebody smoking a spliff. My reason for imploring cannabis consumers not to toke and drive is really much more because that's the number one way tokers get busted, not because I'm terrified they're going to cause mayhem on the freeways. I've just got this problem in America with this relative impairment standard that says, when we talk about drugs and alcohol and driving, right? Granny out there who's so old that her senses are failing and her reaction times are poor, she can be a C driver. But if we smoke a joint and go from an A to a B driver and get in a wreck, we're considered the impaired driver. Granny, if she gets into a wreck, well, it's just unfortunate that an old lady got into a wreck. And that's also a major difference between alcohol and cannabis. The alcohol driver, when he goes from being an A driver to a C driver to an F driver, he still thinks he's a straight A student. Cannabis drivers, we go from like an A to an A minus to a B plus, And then we realize our grades are slipping and we start to study a little harder. We'll talk more about that in hour two. Toker Talk Radio. We'll wind up the weekend. Ganja John and Wiz Khalifa have made it into the studio. Cannabis Carrie still hanging out in the virtual studio. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us this week. Next week, all sorts of great guests, including Elise McDonough. She's going to give us an insight on the new High Times cookbook, Cannabis Cookbook, and other great guests next week. So check the calendar at normal.org/AB. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You're listening to the Normal Network, where the time is 420, 24/7, 365.
It's 5 o'clock in the Pacific time zone. The workday is done. Now it's time for Toker Talk Radio, the voice of the marijuana nation. What are you people?